New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Merry Matrix. I hope everybody's having a delirious and fantastic holiday season. I'll make this quick, and my name is Miguel Connor, your ferryman across the waters of this quantum foam that keeps irritating into these false realities we find ourselves in. So I'm here to tell you that things have changed a little bit. As many of you know from my announcements and some private groups, this week I was meant to do a show with Charles Fleischenhauer on the true Freemason origins of the USA. But as often happens this time of the year, there were holiday issues, there were flu season issues, so we're going to have to reschedule with Charles, and we'll do it in January. And it's going to be bigly. It surely is, because Charles always brings the really amazing receipts. So instead, I thought I'd put another piece of content out for you, and I think it's very relevant. I've been wanting to do this for a while, and since the 2025 simulation is about to ramp up and take humanity into some weird places, I think this is a very relevant show. More than a show, it's actually a talk from our last Astrognosis conference, and this is a presentation from my friend and my favorite witch, Maja Daou, and it is entitled Sophia Logos and Following Source Codes. And I can assure you that it's going to challenge a lot of your predispositions and views on so many things. Just like other guests at Astrognosis, whether it's Chris Knowles or Ola Wolny or Mitch Horowitz, it's going to challenge what you thought about what the Western esoteric system. It's going to turn things upside down. Maja certainly really takes on such topics as astrology, Jesus, Sophia, the simulation, several exemplars of Aeon Byte that I have lauded, and really, again, turn things upside down. But that's certainly the ethos of Aeon Byte, to challenge your egoic systems, to break things apart so that something bigger and better will come out. We can't grow if we're stuck too much in our preconceived ideas and views. If we're too comfortable, we just can't grow. As the great Harold Bloom once said, the central dictum of the Gnostic is that which can be broken should be broken. And it was Emile Cioran who once said that if a book doesn't disturb you, then it's not worth the read. And I would say you could include movies, podcasts, any content on YouTube. If it doesn't challenge you, if it doesn't break things down a little bit, then it's really not worth your time. It's really just, you might say, empty calories, something to support cognitive bias, if you would. So this type of content is very important, and it does help bring something new and better out of us. As Carl Jung once said, the experience of the self is the defeat of the ego. And it's always good to have our ego defeated, and Maja's presentation will certainly do that. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus does tell Thomas that after he spreads or hands out his powerful gnosis, first you will be disturbed, and then you will be amazed. Yes, it's always great when we can have reality disbanded while having our minds expanded. So get ready for that. And I should mention, for promotional purposes, that all three Astronosis conferences are available for the price of one. In other words, you get more than 60 hours of high octane, exclusive, and yes, game changing Gnostic content for the price of one. Also, two, if you enroll in the virtual Alexandria Academy, by the end of the year, you get 30% off. And that's with code Solstice. And if you enroll in the virtual Alexandria Academy, you do get all three Astronosis conferences included at no extra cost. So that's it. So you can enjoy and have your life changed very soon with Maja's amazing revelations. But either way, let me know what you think. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much. It's my pleasure to be here so much around like minds, or maybe iterations of reflections in my mirror box. I don't know. We'll see what happens as we go. I was thinking a lot as I was preparing, and much like Richard, this is all just stuff that I have to say. So I encourage dissent and disagreements and any other negative criticisms you may have on what I say, because I feel like oppositional energies are what move us, right? So if we have polarities, we're going to get to move like the little flagellates on the bacteria. So that's the passion that causes action in chaos. And so this is just based on a lot of things I've read. I read a lot of books, but then I do techniques of ecstasy. So these are like visions that I saw. So I'm not just going to be quoting books and smarty pants, but there'll also be some of my own opinions. So I hope you have a little space for those as well. They may disagree with yours, but a lot of them tend to agree with most of what people write. So I assume, but I don't know, that maybe quite a few people in this room have had an experience where they saw that reality was not what they thought that it was, whether it was through psychedelics, and you certainly don't have to out yourselves if you don't want to, for doing naughty drugs that would show you the pixelation of reality and that you would see sacred geometrical figures emerge out of your own hand. I don't know, I'm just guessing, or something to that effect, where the facade of the material reality would fall away and you would see that there were actors or players behind it, almost like a Shakespeare play, right? You can also have this experience, not on drugs, if you have a severe betrayal, which is how many ladies come to it, and, you know, men as well. I don't want to be gender biased. But I have a lot of clients, and the majority of people's worlds and ego deaths are experienced when they see that the reality they thought was in their mirror box is not what is actually happening on the outside. And there's nothing more nourishing than a good betrayal to lead you to this conclusion, have your world eradicated, and have your eyes kind of go, like, what else isn't true? If this thing I thought was true for so long, how far can we take this expansion, right? So those are the two, I think, main ways that it happens for people. Certainly, there's many others, but I think those are probably the most popular in the club of folks that experience the complete disintegration of reality. Of course, near-death experiences will sure do that too. I almost died three times. I'm obviously still around, but when you have a near-death experience, you are like, whoa, this whole thing I thought is not that thing. And then you're like, what is this? Why are we here? Why is there something else over the rainbow, right? When you can kind of peer over the archons through the colors and past the space. So for those of you that have had some of these experiences, the reason I wanted to mention it is that I want to congratulate you and to value and acknowledge you for being able to still remain in this realm, because a lot of people will just vamoose after such experiences because it's too painful. Right? That pain, the crystallization of pain, is very real. So I just want you to know that I have humility and acknowledgement of the pain that it takes to come into these realizations and the alienation and the isolation that usually occurs as a result. You may think that many of these religions you can find camaraderie in if you've had such an experience, but they in fact treat you like you're crazy. If you have a true mystic experience, most of the organizations aren't very willing to accommodate it. So it takes a room full of crazy people such as yourself to be able to hold that space, and I appreciate it. I'll begin with looking at some of the ideas of what Sophia is, much like everyone has, but hopefully I'll extend and open them a bit like a blossom rather than just repeating the same thing. So I had this picture prepared. I swear we didn't corroborate on wearing pink either. But these images are very important for a couple of reasons, because they give allegorical clues to the identity of Sophia, and some of the symbolism in all esoteric pictures is not just the artist's, fancy, although certainly we get informed by our muses, but symbolism is representing things you can see when you see through reality. So much like the beautiful painting of Yarn, those are depicting a spiritual reality, which is what you can see when that facade drops. Very important to archive these visual images that come from beyond that veil and bring them back. So please remember, when you look at iconic art, symbolist art, religious art, a lot of times it's trying to show you things that are, you have to really look to see and look with your spirit eyes, not your eyeballs. One of the first things you notice about Sophia, or that I do, is that color red, correct? Like the blue deer, who's actually bright red, and that she's depicted as an angel, obviously. But you can see there's a lot of other angels and even Jesus, but Sophia's whole skin and hair is red, not just her vestment. Do you guys notice that? Yeah, right? And then above her is that seat that Richard was talking about, the empty seat, the dwelling place, which we all have one. Do you guys know that there's a throne for you to sit in that's empty that you gotta get to? Wink, wink. There's one for you. And once you can open into Sophia, you get to take your seat enthroned. And if you're lucky, your seat will turn into a chariot if you do enough spiritual labor. So these aren't just symbolic. They're telling you what you're supposed to do in terms of achievements and accomplishments of your spiritual labors. This color red is very significant that I was shown. I was taken through the entire rainbow, and it was totally a rainbow, which I know is so, maybe some of you guys that are more goth or whatever will be like, silly, silly girl. But the archons and the arcs are arches of rainbows, of colors. And so I was taken through each level of what the colors were and symbolically. Red is, I'm going to go through a lot of sciencey, nerdy stuff, so you can Google it later, but I'm just going to do it anyway. Have any of you guys heard of redshift? Yeah. Yeah, right? Why would Sophia be red like this? This is that primordial. The primordial space is what that red is representing. So Google redshift if you like, because it's the source, right, of the oldest matter in the universe is what it is, which of course would be congruent to Sophia. And how did these artists know this? No one had seen redshift yet. Why did they make her red? Why is Jupiter the god of lightning? And there's so much lightning on Jupiter. There's ways we can know things without knowing them. And it's important to learn from these traditions, right? That knowing without knowing is a priori knowledge, which Kant gets. I'm so glad that you spoke about Kant as well, because it's like my favorite obsession is thinking about a priori knowledge, which is like what I feel like Sophia and the Akashic Records and all of these concepts are also getting at for us to know and understand, is that there's things that you will have access to knowing with no experience, with no craft, without becoming the craftsman, without ever doing it. I don't know if any of you guys have had the pleasure of having knowledge drop into your head out of nowhere, telling you or instructing you to do something, and you're like, how did I know how to do that, right? A priori knowledge, which is also affiliated with Sophia and why she's depicted as red. And the angel part of it, it's kind of a whole thing. I don't know if I'll be able to get into it because I have so much time. This is a drawing that I did showing one of my experiences that I had doing the techniques. And when I wanted you guys to notice the hat that's on there, but there is the wings and the angel depiction of most of these. Like Richard said, they're levels of consciousness. My experience of angels was that they were like the arches in the rainbow and that you could arrive at them like a location in consciousness. So like Michael's realm, who is like God? This is like a Cohen that you approach when your mind is able to hold the concept, who is like God? And then you realize and you obtain the level of consciousness. And so it unfolds and this kind of double, everything is doubled in the world. We all have doubles, comes out of the cracks and folds and opens. And that level of consciousness is approachable, is obtainable. I can't get it to stick around. Because you fall back into stupid town, as Kelvin, my teacher, says, right? You can leave stupid town, but you're always going to come back. But you can make anchors through art, through music, through mantras, through triggers. This is why we have divination systems. We're trying to anchor it in there to keep trying to pull us out of stupid town, right? So we remember. Trying to access the memories of it because it like folds back up, right? Like flowers and seasons. But the hat was a reflection of something kind of like Narcissus looking in the pool, I guess. When you do that, you can see the reflections and what they are through not your eyeballs, but your kind of like mind's eye. Now look at her hat. And then look at this hat. It unfolded. It was first like this. Everyone thinks this is the fish hat, right? For the Dagon stuff. But like, that's not what I saw. I saw it unfold when I had the experience into a double situation. I'm really bad with tech. And then you'll see her spiky crown there too, which we'll see more of later. This is Cybele. Or Cybele, which Miguel was talking about before, and her relationship to Sophia. Cybele is known by quite a few other names, the Magna Mater, right? Mountain Mama, take me home. And she is the crystallization or descent of consciousness as it comes into full form of matter, like a crystal or a rock. A lot of the things I've talked about in my books, like the familiars and witchcraft, I talk about how it's a meteor that falls onto a mountain, and so literally a rock, and then they take it into caves, right? I think there's a lot of research that shows it's the black rock on the Kaaba, because it got like stolen and taken all over the place. But who knows really, right? The story is, but that crystallization of into material existence and that fall of the fallen angels into the world, those stories are pretty fun if you think about meteorites and, you know, stuff like that obviously becomes more interesting. And then I'll just lastly, you can look this picture up and, you know, peruse it at your pleasure, but every single thing on her is again symbolizing a spiritual obtainment that you can do. These are not just toys or props that she has. Do you guys recognize? Like, there's the cistern and the caduceus. These all represent and are telling you that she is holding all of these different obtainments. Similarly, you can look at any Egyptian art. They have pictures of like Horus on the boat with all of his accoutrements. This is a way to show like a Boy Scout or Girl Scout sash. Like, I did this, and I did this, and I did this. You can see what achievements people have also if you enter the spiritual space, because it's displayed, right? You can see the feathers in their cap, right? If you know how to look. This image I use a lot. It's in my Familiars in Witchcraft book also, because there's the double of us, right? When it unfolds, and why a lot of the times these things or ascensions of consciousness are depicted as angels or with wings. There's another aspect of you in that throne, that Sophia, that can see much more than you can see in your little mirror box. And so we have to gain access. It's sad, but you're that little guy down on the bottom. I know, so sad for you. We have a guide, or holy daemon, right? Our HGA, it's called so many different things, that, or whatever, even other consciousnesses that you can obtain that have nothing to do with you or your person, that are ancient, that are aeons, that are, you know, archons, whatever, that you can kind of use in order to obtain greater sight and greater vision outside of these boxes that we're trapped in, so that we don't have to just sit there being stupid, right? We can kind of catch a kite and go for a ride, right? So, but you would see this picture in like an alchemy book and you would think, wow, that's weird. Like, what the heck is that? Because if you don't know what it's talking about, it's not going to make any sense, right? Isn't it rude? People tried so hard to make all these anchors to show this stuff, but everybody just forgot anyway. So it's important to remember and look hard at the symbolism, because it is actually really trying to show you something, right? It's really, there's something there. We just might not know what it is. This image is of a sibyl. The sibyls were the oracles, and they were under sibyl. It's the same thing, etymology. They're named after the goddess. A lot of them were virgins, symbolically. I'm going to get into that an awful lot. And these were the holders of the tradition of the Sophia and the Gnostics that would do these practices that they were trying to do, which isn't to say that the other groups didn't, but these were a very special faction of the mysteries of Sophia in terms of gaining that knowledge. She's shown very specifically here with a sword, right? So you might think, she's a warrior, right? But any of you guys that know tarot know what is the sword depicting, right? Discernment and the mind. Without discernment, you're not going to get wisdom. This is the picking out that Richard so eloquently described. Anytime you see that sword held symbolically, it's mentioning, I have discernment. I have achieved the level of the ability to pick out. And so when we see this displayed in the images, you'll also see it. I'll get to it in a moment. I think I put the slide in here. But it's that ability to see what's true. Is it that or is it not? And this is the foundation of all logic, right? Is it this or is it that? Are you my wife or are you not my wife? This is the sword and what it is showing. In the Hebrew alphabet, it is the letter Z, which I always think is funny because of Zorro. I'm like, wait, did they do that on purpose, those stinkers? But it is that Zayin, right? You'll see a lot of pictures of Zayin. It has a crown. There are some Hebrew letters that get that crown on them. And it's that sword, which is the sword of God, right? And that's also talked about in the sixth and seventh books of Moses. In many esoteric literatures, you're going to find all these references to swords, and even like in the Quran, and then everyone thinks they're talking about war and everything, but no, they're just stupid because they don't know what the symbol is talking about, and they think it's a real sword. So then they think, oh, we have to fight everybody with our sword and kill everybody, or that it's like a penis or something, and it's like, no, it's the sword of discernment, right? Which just makes it funnier when people don't know what the sword of discernment is. I always enjoy it anyway. But there's also this kind of secret in the name Sophia that I wanted to mention before I get much further, which is in the letters. And I know every linguist will argue with me, but I don't really care. So the name Sophia contains three very important letters, which are O-P-H. OF. Do you guys know what OF stands for? Anybody? Anciently? The snake. The serpent is the wisdom source in every single thing you're going to look at, okay? If you look into Hermetica, where does Hermes get all of his smarty pants? He has a conversation with Poimanders, the giant serpent. It's all giant flying snakes everywhere you look. Right? So if you want to know what is the source code of wisdom, it's hidden in the word, like such a little cute little puzzle that if you don't know what the word oaf is, you're not going to know. If you want to get way deep and nerdy into it, you can look at the book Ophiolatria by Hargrave Jennings. I think it's even online on Sacred Texts for free. Lucky you. And you can get way into it. I also go off on it in my book, The Secret Source, and how it pertains to Hermeticism, Gnosticism, and all of these things. And we see that serpent on the tree. I always get so mad that nobody knows everything. They talk about the serpent on the tree in the Bible, and everybody thinks that it's Satan, but it's Sophia telling Eve the knowledge of how to reproduce herself parthenogenically, which she doesn't have sex with Adam to have Cain and Abel. She does that later with him, with Seth, was the first iteration of Adam. She has, I know, go ahead, disagree. She has Cain and Abel parthenogenically, just like Sophia parthenogenically creates matter and the world, self-created from herself. And this is where the virgin idea of why many of the practitioners like the Vestal Virgins or the Sibyls or all of these people had that kind of representation. And I looked way into the etymology of virgin, which it really doesn't mean like someone who hasn't had sex, but it has many meanings. For women, it was sometimes used if they didn't have a husband because they had their own mind pure, a virgin pure mind, because in most of the cultures, if you were a woman and you had a husband, he was telling you what to do and you had to just follow his orders. So it was more rare that a woman was able to do her own things and call her own day. She had to like not have children to do that. I have two kids. I don't get to call the shots, man. I don't know how many of you guys have kids, but you're on their orders. So I lost my virginity when I gave birth. But the origins of virgin is verg, werg, or worg. These different words, it's W-E-R-G, V-E-R-G, varg, warg, from Proto-Germanic and like Old English. And those two words mean everything from wolf, which I was like, oh my God, that's so weird, because Little Red Riding Hood, like what? How are these things related? But then they also go to outcast or to cast out, which is also Sophia gets like, you have to get thrown out of something and that idea. And I was like, why is that talking about virgin? But then it also is used for divination and oracles, that werg or warg, to cast, because back in the day you cast lots. Or you throw these casts, and that's how you do divination to stop it. And so this is why people would go and they would visit the oracles and the sibyls, was to get that sort of like cast in time from the daemon, right? So when they were talking about virgin, they were talking about something very different than most of us think about. And think of how much information is lost in the misinterpretation of that word. And what a tragedy it is that when we think about the Virgin Mary, that we could all just be thinking that she didn't have sex, right? What a loss, what a tragedy of just the lineage of information and data going away, right? So that wisdom on the Asherah tree that Sophia is on when she gives it to Eve takes on a different meaning to me. When I read the story, she's like, I want to be like you. I want to be able to create. I want to be able to make a me like you made me. And then God's like, have fun. Sure. Here you go. Enjoy your birth. Crystallization of pain, right? So that reads much different when you see it in this manner. And then, of course, the symbolism of Mary and the parthenogenesis. To me, that means she experienced coming into Sophia and had her wisdom thrown. Not that she had a baby boy, you know, as a virgin. She had a parthenogenic Sophia experience. Okay, is what it's esoterically saying in my mind, but I don't know how many other people would say that as well. I have to put my granny glasses on. And then when you look into like the sophists, like Richard was saying, they'll have this idea of craftsman or craftsperson or knowing something from doing something, which that I wanted to just say that if you look up some of the definitions of demiurge, although Richard's paragraph was the best ever, demiurge, the meaning of it also means craftsman, which is like metallurgy, right? Someone who forges something. And for those of you that are super nerds like me, if you've ever read any Mircea Eliade books on the origins of knowledge and how we got it through alchemists, through shamans, how do you know things you don't know? Well, the shamans became urgists or able to do their craft, which was fire, which was metal, which was all of these things. And so by doing this, they were able to go onto their astral travels and their flights, and then come into Sophia in that fashion, right? So that demiurge is an important concept, which is a path to wisdom as shown through the shamanic arts, which are the urges, right? All of the urges. The other meaning that you get from the warg and the virg and the vargy, schmargity, bargity, is that we come to the definition and etymology of the word wise. And part of that is W-E-I-D, which is also a variation of werg. And it means to see, which is something that also Richard brings up, is that just because you see something, you think that's the thing. And that this idea of being wise means that you can see more stuff than other people can see, right? Because, you know, we're going to go about our day. Maybe we have like some spinach in our teeth and it's going to take a friend to say, hey, like you got some schmutz or whatever. We can't see everything by ourselves. So we have to come into this way of seeing that is going to be wise, which means to come into a multifaceted perception, like a diamond rather than a cube. Right? So the more faces you can stick on your cube, here's a little treasure for you guys. You're in a cube and you have to multiplicatio it so that it gets more faces so that you can see more things. Does that make sense? It's just like math, right? So the more facets that you're able to carve through your labor on your perceptual tool, the more you're going to see, right? Are you like a 6-sided die or a 20-sided die in the D&D game, right? So Shiva's dice, right? He probably had a 20-sided die. I don't know. And these are all also related to wit, clever, cunning. It was used, the word was cunning back in the day because it was like you could trick people, which is what the shamans would do. And they would trick people into thinking that they knew something and then try to force them to go a different way was the main purpose they would use for that. So Let's see, where else did I go? Oh, yeah, and then I wanted to briefly mention, too, that idea of chokma, which probably a lot of other people are going to talk about, too. Part of chokma is not just Sophia, but it's the urge. Again, it's so funny. I kept coming across this word urge, that creative urge to make something, like that need to, like, which is why she parthenogenesis'd. There was that desire to make it. I don't know how many of you do art, but you'll know that it kind of takes you over in that way. And it feels like maybe not your choice because you got to do it, right? So that idea of chokma is also passion, which I was shown that it wasn't logos that was first. Like to have logos, there had to first be a desire to logos, to come into being, which is eros. So I always feel like before logos, there was eros, because who gives a crap about making Legos if you don't care, right? You have to have the eros to make the Lego, right? Or it won't come about. It takes a lot of labor, right? Okay, let's see. I think I'm going to go into the simulated reality section of our journey, which it looks like I'm the first one to kind of delve into this, which is very fun. Let's see where my slides are at here. Oh, yeah. After you get your sword of wisdom, it's a bummer. So you first get your sword of discernment, and then you're like, oh, God, no. And then you go, please, God, no. No, 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 no. So you can see, like, how happy she looks. She's all, like, proud that she's like, yeah, smart. But then it's like, oh, God, no. You see the corruption of the world. This is when you come into your contemptus mundi. This is Our Lady of Sorrows, as Mary experiences it, after she watches everybody murder her son for something stupid. For usury debt. So she has to sit there and watch these ding-dongs just murder her son and be like, you can't be this stupid. And then she's like, no, they really are that stupid. And then this leads her on her path. I don't know. It's weird how people don't talk about the path of Mary and her seven sorrows and what she undergoes in her transformational journey, which includes grief, which I guess is why most people don't talk about it, because it's a bit more of a bummer than the Rise Again story. She has had to sit there and be sad that her son is dead. So I guess it's more goth than people are comfortable with. But she comes into this parthenogenic state, and now we're going to get into the iteration, which is the word, again, Richard used. So many good syncops. I love it so much. But in the demiurge state, you say it's an iteration, which is exactly what it is. And this is the main code that I wanted to talk about today, and in terms of fractals as well, which I know is so 90s, but it's still very pertinent. And we have to talk about fractals and iterations. So you can see this is the Lady of the Apocalypse here on the left-hand path, which is very appropriate. And you can see the dragon there, and she's like all, oh, no. But then she has her Sophia embodiment where Jesus comes in, and she's like, oh, great, kind of idea. When these depictions are used symbolically with Jesus in the center, these are a very specific icon. Do you guys know this one? Have you seen it? Where Mary, she's not holding Jesus. He's in herself. This is the one where Jesus is in her belly. Yes. The one where he's there in the middle. This is a very specific depiction that I was shown was Emmanuel. The name Emmanuel was given to me when I saw this and came to understand it, which is when it dropped in and became materialized within her. So that symbolism, when it's depicted in this way, is showing that she has God with her. Emmanuel means God is with us now, here. Like Sophia is here with us, guiding. She had that experience of obtaining it, coming out of the chaos and seeming pain of the dragon and apocalypse, where everything is destroyed and we go through our ego death. Then we get to have our little Jesus drop into our heart, and we're guided, and we know that we get a little wiser, right? Also, P.S., Jesus isn't the right name. Do you guys know? They do so many tricky things with the names. Do you know why it's not Jesus? There was no letter J. Do you guys know that? Until just a little while ago. So everybody says, like, in the name of Jesus. And I'm like, it's not the right name. I won't tell you the name because you got to look forward to something. So down below, there's this iteration, right? So we see we're constantly going back and forth between these two things. You're like chaos, smart, chaos, smart. If you're able to obtain wisdom, you kind of keep going in and out of it, right? Because then you'll have like people die and then you're like, oh, I guess I didn't know anything. Like if your loved one dies and then you're going to get thrown back into chaos. It's so awful. And so this iteration that we see down here in this equation is like actually how things get renewal. The material world has this ability of iteration and reproduction and multiple cardio so that we can experience renewal and rebirth, which is what the Christ or so-called Jesus is representing, the renewal, right? You know, the Christ, the chrysalis, the chartreuse, they told me, another color. You guys are getting so much good color stuff today. It's the golden green, that first bud of spring, where it is renewed. And from the old tree, you get those fresh new buds. And that's because of the power of iteration, which is Sophia's power. It's Sophia's power to not only create the world, but to continually renew it through iteration.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right? This was just kind of funny. And I thought it was extra funny because it has a gnome and it's a gnostic. And then I kept thinking about gnomes and gnostic and those kind of words like quite a bit. But it's like kind of your perception or how you play the game, like Miguel was saying, right? How are you going to play the game if you see it, right? What you doing, playa? Are you going to be the gnome or are you going to be the gnostic? And then I kept just thinking about gnus. So I just wanted to put a gnu so that we could see the gnu. I don't know. That's all they're such crazy, weird creatures, actually. I was always like little. I was like, what is this thing? It looks like five different animals, like all into one. But anyway, thank you, gnu. This is a common iteration. This is like the most basic, right? You take a thing, you make the thing over and over and over and over, right? When I was in college, I took a fractal geometry class where I learned all about it and chaos theory, which of course was a long time ago. I won't tell you how old I am, but you can probably guess because I'm talking about fractals. And everybody kind of forgot about them because they went out of vogue. But they were so pertinent with all of the COVID shenanigans that went on and how people were trying to do prediction and prophecy towards how diseases operate. I thought it was very fascinating because I wrote a paper in the chaos class about how scientists try to use statistics to predict measles outbreaks in labs. But then when it got into nature, nothing happened like they thought it was going to happen because everything went into chaotic iteration. And so chaos theory ended up being better mathematics in order to predict things in complicated systems, right? We all kind of know this stuff is like the most basic fractal stuff. But that source code of reality and how nature operates is through these iterations, right? This is the kind of fall of Sophia. We take the god, this is a hydra, which is an organism, and it creates an iteration of itself, okay? And then that's ancestry. All of your ancestors, you are an iteration of through reproduction, through multiple cardio, right? So all of nature follows this code or this path. And so every spiritual symbolic thing is done the same way, but on a different dimension. If you want to know about how spirit works, you look at nature, you look at the world, because it's the same story told again and again and again. When you see it through studying things like sacred geometry or things like this, you're like, whoa, why doesn't everybody see this? It seems so obvious. And why can't we get to unification theory so that everyone can just come into an agreement and understand? So Sophia falls as an iteration of the image of the same thing she came from, but a different one too. Just like, you're not your mom and dad, but you are your mom and dad. You're not your great, 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 great grandparents, but you are though also, right? Paradox, right? Cross-eyed. And then organisms follow this. I wanted to include this just because it's Ernest Haeckel. And Madame Blavatsky really hated Ernest Haeckel and made fun of him a lot. Have you guys read The Secret Doctrine? She like disses him so hard in there. She's so sassy. I love her. But he made all these crazy drawings showing, because he was seeing this pattern in the source code, right? Like you can see that these things, they all start to look the same. He also married his 13-year-old cousin. So I guess it was different days back then. But you can see they always take the same shapes and the same forms. Just like us, you're going to be able to see these kinds of iterations everywhere. Fractals, right? It's all just doing the same thing over and over again, right? And it's doing it from the iteration of the same number of sequences that we're going to be starting with, these sets, these number sets, right? Proteins follow the same thing. A lot of people will see these pictures of DNA, and you think it just looks like a nice, neat, and tidy little line of the thing. Then it gets all crazy. After it makes the line, it all jumbles up into like those little, you see like how it's all just like gathering. This is the gathering. So what I was experiencing was we get the iteration, the discernment, and then it kind of gathers around a central structure. This is the same story. And it's the sexual reproduction story. The asexual reproduction story is how atoms work. It's how molecules work. It's the same, all it's turtles all the way down, right? They're all doing the same thing. These are what DNA starts to look like once it's bigger than that little spiral that is the only thing that everybody shows. Protein strands start to kind of ribbon out and go into spaghetti, and then they all accumulate around a central source. And this is because of fractals and golden ratio, right? So you can see, if you wanted to look up more about that, what that code is. But I highly recommend, if you want to know what the source code is, that's what it is. So once you start to raise your awareness to it and then see it everywhere, you're going to be able to see much, much more and see through the facade of matter into the inner structure of what's actually happening, right? So then Madame Blavatsky comes up with this idea of root races and the iterations of humanity and how many things we've been through. This goes through a very controversial period because everyone thinks that she's talking about race, which she explicitly says and explains she's not. But somehow, you know, the Thulians get a hold of it and they think that's what it is. So just like they think a sword is a penis. So it's like a misunderstanding and a misinterpretation. When the root race theory that Madame Blavatsky was talking about was that we have had iterations of existence that have gone through these evolutionary developments, and that we are these iterations of Sophia, literally, that it's us, right? So if how many of you guys have read Simulation Theory, the paper by Nick Bostrom? Okay, so a couple nerds, but not a lot. We're in here talking about simulation theory. You know, maybe you guys should read the paper. I recommend it. It gets real controversial again because a bunch of racist ding-dongs think that simulation theory, including Nick Bostrom himself, is to protect us from getting more stupid as people. So we should choose races and intellectual people to reproduce to save the species. This is also popularly known as eugenics. There was an email that was widely circulated from his chat group on the altruism groups they always call themselves these like human improvement program or like the altruist peeps of such and such, right? So, but he's the one that wrote the simulation theory paper, okay, that caused like Elon Musk supported him and Bill Gates, and everybody starts pouring all their money to support the simulation theory and his work. And the reason why is because it supports AI. So all of these tech lords started supporting Nick Bostrom because it makes it worth it to spend billions of dollars on AI if we're protecting and saving everybody from being stupid. What grander, more moralistic reason could you come up with than why it would be necessary to make their companies grow and grow and grow and invest more and more money if they're not saving the world and saving humanity? Nick Bostrom specifically says that he thinks that certain races of people are going to be reproducing more and iterating more, and they're stupid. So we have to stop them from reproducing, and we have to make these people reproduce. Classic eugenics, right? Which is when people get a hold of some of this esoteric material and don't understand it, there is always the danger of utopia, perfectionism, right? And this idea that we can make ourselves better through this knowledge. This is where we get into arrogance, right? Now you're in your little box of the demiurge, and you're thinking you're the one that's so smart, smarter than Sophia, smarter than nature's creative iterations, that you'll be able to figure it out. According to Blavatsky, the root races are happening whether you like it or not. We're going to be coming into this wisdom, and there's basically nothing you can do to stop it. And isn't that comforting? Because it's not about you. So if we experience that reality is not quite real and we think it's simulated, right? The idea that Bostrom puts forward is that, oh, we're going to have to make weapons to make sure that our future selves that come up with this technology don't kill us. This is what he says in the simulation theory. He says, he posits a future race might be simulating their ancestors, and he gives probabilities of these things. Well, I can tell you right now that we have been simulating our ancestors constantly from the beginning. Your body is an iteration of your ancestors. That's the tech that is reiterating ancestry and is the simulation of reality. There's no future offspring that will do it. It's happening now. We're in it now. And he's saying that the probability that we are the simulations, right, is then good because he says no one would be interested in iterating and simulating their ancestors. He says, so they probably wouldn't do that post-human. But that's literally what all of nature does because of reproduction. Right? We iterate our ancestors in simulation constantly through divination, through writing, through speaking mythologies, right? Through talking about our grandparents. These are the indigenous sciences, which he completely leaves out of the picture. And that all of the indigenous sciences have an absolute method and techniques of accessing ancestors, and that's all they spend all their time on. So, if you read simulation theory and you know indigenous sciences, you'll get a good chuckle, maybe, like I did. The other funny thing that I looked up was that Nick Bostrom, I don't know if Greg from Higherside Chats is here or not yet, but I looked up because I was like, who's this guy's ancestors, right? I was getting all like persnickety. And Bostrom and Bockström, he's Swedish, okay? So he comes from Bockström, which is Eeyore Bock. You guys know, have you heard the Higherside Chats about Eeyore Bock? And I was like, this is too crazy. Why didn't Nick Bostrom find out about Eeyore Bock? He'd be so much smarter than he thinks he is, right? If he had connected to his own ancestors. I just thought it was like a little cherry on the top of irony when I did a little DNA research into him. By the way, if you find the Higherside Chats about Eeyore Bock, you're in for a treat, okay? So highly recommend it. Thank you, darling, for introducing me to it because it's really a mind changer. And it corresponds with Madame Blavatsky's root race theory in the most proper way that she intended, not in these some races are dominant over others kind of way. I include this quote. You obviously can't read it right now. But if you look at the bottom, it's in volume 2, page 444 to 446 of The Secret Doctrine. And she goes through and really explains it and the cycles and the reiterations, just like that Mary and Emmanuel and Dragon that I talked about earlier. She says the exact same thing, right? One of the best things about the truth is that it's always the same. Everywhere you see it, truth is hard as stone, right? The origin of true is tree because they said it was hard as wood, right? So we see that these DNA fractals start to gather and accumulate into these globes, into these selves. This is where we come into the self. And that's the gathering. This is what a planet is as well, folks, by the way, because it happens from the atom level all the way up. I don't know why we're having so much trouble with unification theory. When you read esotericism, seems pretty straightforward, right? It's just a bunch of goo gathering around a central point. This was a pretty good one that everyone has to remember. If you ever think in your brain that you are pretty smart, think about how much your body did that you had no idea about. Right? Good luck. Are you smarter than your body? Could you remember all day to beat your heart if someone assigned you to it? I don't think so. Try tracking your breathing. For those of you meditators, how long do you track your breath? Gets real sketchy. So the wisdom of the body, the wisdom of Sophia, she's got a little up on us, right? No matter what tech we make, our tech is all a response to our bodies. We'll watch it, but we still don't understand what's going on in there. Closest we came, I think, was hypnotism. So these are x-rays of DNA, too, and how it forms these same globes with the dot in it, right? It's all globes with the dot in it. Samsara, globes with the dot in it. Again and again and again and again. The iteration, right? Everything is cycled. Blavatsky talks about this in so much length that I really don't need to. But the Sophia code is the iteration of samsara, right? She's very influenced, obviously, by the Vedic teachings for a reason, because it's that truth that keeps repeating over and over, right? Growing stuff in a petri dish, it's going to do the same thing that this guy does, right? It gets real dumb when you see it. Everywhere, you start to get a little bored. This one was pretty funny too, right? It's the same, that circle with the dot in it then becomes the symptom when you do the line, like Richard had the absolute. When you put that line from that dot and then it makes the arches, the archons, the rainbows is what I saw anyway when my eyes opened. And then we get these things again. They're not just showing Mary. Like everyone thinks like, oh, it's pretty. But this is, again, a spiritual attainment that you can do. Do you see the spiky thing, right? This is a thing that happens to you as you disrobe, so to speak, and it emerges out of you. It's not just a pretty picture, right? And the Virgin Mary is showing Sophia because her story is about how it's a path to wisdom and how it's embodied, obtained, and then shared into the world, right? She's not just having a baby. The Time Lords show us the story and the archons and the power constantly through myth, or if you're a Doctor Who fan, but the astrological portion of the knowledge comes from the Time Lords who are so immortal that they've seen the cycle more than a few times, right? So you become a Time Lord when you kind of can have that breakthrough. Like after being an astrologer for years and years, I think it was 2014, I was like, this is the same thing I said the last 5 years. Here we are again, Lionsgate again. Oh my God. This is the same thing over and over. Nothing's new. It's all the same ring. We're trapped in the Lord of the Rings. Oh, no. And then everyone's all excited about, like, spring equinox and winter solstice. And I was like, no, it's an illusion. You're trapped. It's a prison. Get out. Don't give it more fodder. Because the Time Lords love to be fed your fodder. I still use astrology, though. It's a good tool. But you have to know that it's not the thing, right? That's idolatry, is when you think the thing is the thing. The mirror is the thing, and that there's not another thing. Don't do that. At least if you're going to use it, you got to know and remind yourself, this is not the thing, right? And then you got to have, like, a little wink. And then I just think it's funny that cockroaches look like Time Lords. Because they really, like, right? They look like almost wearing the same clothes. But it is freaky, too. When you get to certain levels, you're going to see the insect stuff, which was depicted in the painting. It's all praying mantises. Anybody see those guys? You saw the praying mantises? Yeah. You have to go through the jokers to get to the praying mantises, but they're there. not a good time when you see those guys. They're pretty scary. I don't know about you guys, but I don't really like bugs. So I think that's like most of the things I was going to say. Oh, yeah. And then the last thing that I wanted to bring up, I know we're going to open for maybe some questions, but the last thing I wanted to mention was about the idea of the error and the fall, right? So as Miguel and Richard said so many times, that this fall of Sophia is seen as a mistake, as an error. But that the chaos and the fractal geometry is very important, because what you see is that without those deviations, I would say not an error, not a mistake, a deviation. And this is what DNA does as well. It doesn't keep replicating itself the same way every time. If it did, we'd be dead, because we'd get one disease that came in. It has to stay animated. It has to stay moving and changing and shifting. This you can learn through the I Ching, that art of change, that the reason why Sophia falls and we can iterate and be renewed and have that Christ come into us is that we keep having the chaotic creative urge to just go a different way, to do a new thing, to do something a different way than we did before. And that's wise, right? What is the definition of insanity? Is doing something the same way over and over and over again. There's no error in randomly taking a risk to make another move, right? Of course, you got to use your discernment to do your risk assessment. But the point of having these chaotic iterations is for our growth. It might not be for your personal growth, but as a collective, as a totality, if we don't have our risk takers, our ones that are willing to go a different way, to deviate, to be cast out, to kind of go outside of the groove, we're not as a species going to be able to have that collective momentum that will propel and push us into our striving, into our growth, into our evolution of the root races, like Madame Blavatsky showed in her chaotic spiral. So I do feel like coming into true knowledge of what Sophia represents is going to be good for everyone, because it's going to enable us to propel ourselves towards our next iteration. Yeah. So that's what I had for today. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Is this working? Can you hear me? I'm thinking of that song by Rush, Signals.
Oh, yeah.
Deviate from the norm.
Canadians, yeah.
Canadians, that's of course, right. Yeah. After you, the greatest thing that's come out of Canada. So, questions? Let's deviate from the norm.
That was amazing.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I loved how you related Sophia to the urge to create. And I love the art that you included. I was wondering if you could speak briefly about AI art and how we may relate to that. Is there any basically value for growth there or not?
I personally feel like it's pretty soulless. And my kids are so funny. My children, when they see an AR thing, they go, oh, it's AI, gross. And I didn't say anything to them, because I was like, hey, what do you guys think if I use this picture? And they're like, oh, gross, it's AI. You can feel, it feels different. I can tell when I'm reading it too, it feels different. I don't know. I'm getting to be a grumpy old lady, so maybe I'm not the best to ask that question. But it saves labor. So here's the thing. Like, AI will save labor. Like, if I'm trying to do something and I just don't have time or money to hire a graphic designer to, like, do all this, but I want, like, something pretty. Like, AI is very convenient. It's like going to McDonald's versus cooking a meal, though, really. Like, so part of it is having an impact on the creative spirit and creators, because I don't think it's cool, man. I think creators aren't getting enough value as it is. And to just think that you could replace artists with a computer-generated version that is not as good, doesn't have that right, I don't like it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw another hand.
Thanks also for your talk.
You're welcome.
You mentioned earlier about in the spiritual realm seeing achievement or the badges. Can you tell us what are they for? Why are they there?
Yes, I can. We're here for more than to just work and go to school, right? This is what Kelvin DeWolf would always say, my teacher. Our time here is precious in that we have to elevate ourselves. We have a job to do here that isn't just with our hands, right? You can change your trajectory. So when one of my near-death experiences, I saw everything and it was these rainbow roads. You guys remember that show with the roller coaster where it goes into space and there's all these rainbows? That's what happened to me. I died. And there's different paths that you can go that go different places. And when you can raise your conscious awareness to a state of lucidity, you can consciously choose the path. Otherwise, you're kind of sent on a chute. They all go somewhere, right? So it's not like it's bad. You just get recycled right through a moot. She's going to put you back through the goo, and you get to try again. So it's like that Tom Cruise movie, right? You can repeat it again. There's no big punishment. You just have to do it again. So as you obtain these spiritual labors, you get more power in the afterlife to choose your direction to go, which is what discussed in like the Bodhisattva stuff or like the Ascended Masters, for example. Once you obtain that, you get to kind of like drive your car rather than being a passenger, if that makes sense. That's just what I think. Other people probably would have other ideas. The indigenous, most of the stuff I've read, the indigenous say it's for is so you can go on your star path. So the majority of Native Americans see the star path that we come from and that we go to. And if you don't make the cut, the brain smasher puts you back in. So if you don't do your labor, you're just going to have to do a redo for as many times as you want.
So what are some of those labors?
There's a lot of them. That's probably like a whole nother lecture. But you can do, a lot of people think spirituality is just about being a nice person, which isn't true. Moses killed people, right? Genghis Khan was one of the highest spiritually achieved individuals in a lot of ways. But don't tell anyone I said so, because then people will think, oh, I could be a criminal and still be spiritual, which is true. And if you do really bad things and then do the labor of repentance and ablution, so that's one of the spiritual labors, is self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others, but not in a way that tolerates, in a way that changes, that evolves and transmutes. For a lot of spiritual labors, you can go into a lot of research into alchemy. Lucid dreaming is a big one in my novel 4D that I talk about. Like if you obtain lucid dreaming, you'll kind of be able to do a lot of other things, right? But if there's one thing you should do, get contact with your Sophia, because then you'll know all this other stuff. So it's like cheating on the exam.
Well, I've been trying to do that
for
a while and I'm not having success.
It took me 4 years, so don't be haughty about it, right? It takes a while. My teacher says if it was easy, everyone would be doing it, right? So it's like, I want to be a kung fu star, but I don't want to do kung fu. Like, might take a while, right? So it's training, it's practice, and you do it by iteration. So whatever your technique or practice is, do it over and over and over again until the engine kind of starts to roll. But it's going to be really boring and you're going to want to quit. Always. I quit a lot of times, but not for good. Yeah. So
if you don't do it, do you lose it or is it something that
I have not lost it, even as lazy as I get. So let me stand as an example that you can fuck up a lot and still make it. Right. Everyone thinks you have to be so good and it stops people from being good because they think I'm not good. So I'll just give up. That's garbage talk. There's renewal, right? do it again. Try it again. How about now? Right? Tomorrow, there's another dawn. Right? We have to, these things are important to remember that we can continue trying and doing and going. Right? But it's weird. If you try it a lot and nothing happens, you'll be like, oh, this is garbage. Why am I doing this for hours and hours? Right? Because so many of the techniques are discipline-based. So it's really hard and you want to quit.
Thank you. Thank you for your time and your talk. Thank you. We talked about getting to those states, attaining those states where you could see behind the veil, if you will. How do you handle crashing back down to earth and you're in front of your boss 2 days later and he's saying, how could you have screwed up so bad again? And you're like, don't you understand where I was 2 days
they
ago?
They don't.
How do you handle that?
That is such a good question, so rooted and grounded in humility, and I really appreciate it because it sucks. I mean, you know, you have to reground and then you're like, oh God, I still have to do the dishes. You still have to go to work. You still have to do labor, but you're in this altered, you know, perceptual framework and no one else is there with you. This is where we fall into the isolation. Tools for integration are going to be grounding techniques. A lot of them I learned in martial arts. One of the best ones, which sounds so dumb, is you smack yourself, you know, lightly or whatever, but you have to literally like, okay, I'm in my body. Like, here we go. Ready? Okay. Like, back to the show, right? But you have to really take a moment or use techniques that are going to keep you down in your body, right? Dionne Fortune talks about this a lot, as does Madame Blavatsky. A lot of people don't know why a lot of these psychic mediums gain so much weight so that they don't fly away, P.S. So a lot of things which help in this situation, even for grief, is you'll eat root vegetables. Sweet potatoes sounds so dumb, but it really helps a lot. Or carrots or... you know, food helps get into your body. So when you go way out or go dissociative, you're going to need to do some techniques to re-embody. So those are going to be physical. Go for a walk. But it's not easy at all. And you could have significant loss as a result of coming out. Or certain experiences you're going to find remove entire groups of friends and family. There's a lot of loss through this process. And then you realize why they talk so much about non-attachment. But then you're like, if I'm not attached to anything, I'm a psychopath. So it gets real weird. It gets real weird. You got to ground into love. The best scene I can say is, did you guys see Wrinkle in Time or read the book? There's a part where the little boy is with Satan or whatever the guy is. And he's saying, oh, I'm so smart. Look what I can do. I can do all this stuff and I know this and I can make these shapes. And his sister's like, I love you. Come back. I missed you. So it's like you have to, you can't get caught in that demiurge box. You have to come back into that love, into that care, compassion and grounding back to your sister, you know, back to the people that love and care about you. But we do still have to psychonaut an adventure. So I think it has to be done cyclically and you must include reintegration time or you will lose your mind like the guy in the box. Very dangerous part of the work for sure. Yes.
Thank you as well. I really appreciate your lightheartedness and it makes me excited to know that a lot of this heavy stuff can be engaged with in such a happy type of way. And it's very encouraging. I think my question revolves around like resistance. And Miguel talked about the crystallization of pain, like this isn't going to be easy. And then what I just thought of as well is the resistance doesn't, it applies to both sides. If we're going to be resistant because it's so painful, we're going to also in a way resist the ability to earn the badges.
Oh, yeah.
And so could you expand on your thoughts around that?
Yes, I think you have to be kind of masochistic, honestly, to be spiritual, because you will resist. And you'll also just like the futility, right? You'll feel that impotence, like you'll come up against it and be like, this, even if you do obtain it, you can't make anybody else get it. So then the futility is very overwhelming. And that feeling of impotence, right? That you can do it, but then you can't talk to anybody else, right, about it. And then you're like, what is this even for? So you're going to resist it hard, because then you're going to want to just go back to that ignorance of bliss and not knowing, right? Which just totally makes that Bible story very different when you understand, when you really see, right, that sword in the heart, the difference, that's the resistance. One of the things that my teacher taught me was that in Native Americanism, that's the warrior. And you have to go through warrior level. So there's these different levels, right? There's divination level, where we start to come into seeing everything in the pattern. And then you go into warrior. And that's when you have to be able to not give up. You have to understand you're going to be resistant, but you don't stop. He says the warrior doesn't stop fighting even after his last breath, right? Even after you're dead, you don't stop. And that's how you continue through and past death. So it's an inner resolve that you have to announce and keep as like a pillar inside yourself, that you're just going to do it anyway, like forcing yourself to do the dishes. Or you have to come into an awareness that this will be hard, this will be painful, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because if I don't, it's just more boring. But that's the warrior level, where you come into that knowing of like, I consciously choose to do this. It's your will. Your will is what will overcome resistance. You have to be kind of a bitch. Yeah. If you were really nice, you wouldn't do any of this stuff, I promise. Yeah.
Yes, and for the audience, after our next talk at noon, Maja's going to lead us on a little experience. For those of you who want to join, I want to join, because, yeah, we can talk about Sophia all day and all that, but let's get into the...
We can do it.
We can do it. Yeah, let's do it. So probably one more question before we... there you go.
So I really appreciate your interpretation of the birth narrative and looking at that differently. I'm curious though, because if virgin means that she is in control of her own Sophia, then the Joseph character then would indicate that she's actually under authority still. Was Joseph maybe a later addition to reinforce the church's teaching that she's under authority, or does he represent something else in the story?
That's a really good question. And if you actually read closely, she leaves Joseph at the altar. Do you guys know this? Mary gets cold feet and she jams because her cousin Elizabeth wants to talk to her. So she gets message and goes to see Elizabeth. And she goes to see her cousin Elizabeth. And Elizabeth says, there's someone that wants to talk to you. And it turns out it's the angel Gabriel. And that's when the Annunciation occurs. But she leaves. Joseph doesn't tell him where she's going or doing. And Joseph is like, I thought we were going to get married. So he's like bummed, right? And they don't talk about this except in apocryphal literature, like the Gnostic Gospels. So, but he's like, hey, man, what's going on? She leaves for a long time, like enough time to have a baby. Can you imagine leaving your husband before you guys were going to get married, and then she saunters up with a baby and is like, oh, hi. So she leaves in order to achieve her connection to Sophia. She is not with him yet, and she only gets married afterwards. That's the sequence of events. Interestingly enough, I don't know why people don't talk about this. This is in my Familiars in Witchcraft book. Elizabeth also has a parthenogenic birth. Why doesn't anyone talk about that? This is John the Baptist, is her baby. Do you guys know that? So Elizabeth goes to Mary. She's like, hey, it's cool. The same thing happened to me. And I'm like, what? That's St. John the Baptist, who huge cults thought was the Messiah, not Jesus. Any of you guys hip to this? I talk about it in my book. There were many cults that believed that St. John the Baptist was the Messiah and that Jesus was a double or a... a scapegoat or a stand-in. Because when you start learning about paganism and esotericism, you learn that one of the magical devices that people use all the time, like a voodoo doll, is a scapegoat or a stand-in. So how convenient if St. John was really the true Messiah. Better have someone else saying how they're like, it's me, I swear, right? Like a figurehead. Which isn't to take away, because clearly it was also a parthenogenic experience. However, a lot of that material got quickly shoved aside. But she has her baby that becomes St. John, and the Jesus and St. John are like totally together. And then, of course, that's the last part of the New Testament is the Book of Revelations, right? So she arguably obtained her Sophia virginhood before her wedding. But a very appropriate question with such an elaborate answer, right? How crazy. How crazy. No one talks about that in church.
I didn't hear about any of that in seminary.
You don't. Why not? It's in the Bible.
What and for the for the audience, we are having a panel tomorrow. So if I know it is some questions bubble up for our guests, bring them tomorrow. But yeah. Please thank Maja for
thank
a wonderful journey.
Thank you.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.